Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Friday, January 19th, 2018. In for Andy Klein, I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, historians Paulette Simpson and Wayne Jensen will preview their Friday fireside lecture about the Treadwell Gold Mine. Andrea Budbill will highlight Lyft, Planned Parenthood's new family program. We'll hear from the Alaska Youth Choir about auditions. And Tom Cosgrove and Pete Griffin will preview Sunday's Story Factory Workshop. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 35 degrees with light rain, fog, and mist here in the capital city.
This is national native news. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders are among those concerned about the possible closure of the U.S. government if Congress does not pass a spending bill by midnight. Tribal leaders say a shutdown will cripple services and slow their work in Indian country. Chairman Nathan Small of the Shoshone-Bannock tribes testified before lawmakers this week on a jobs bill, but first called on Congress to keep obligations to Native Americans.
Indian tribes, like the Shoshone-Bannock tribes, we ceded millions of acres of our homelands to build this great nation. In return, the U.S. promised to provide for the basic needs of Indian citizens. A shutdown would violate the promises that the U.S. made to the tribes under the treaties. Congress needs to find a way to keep the government running. Our tribal work programs and our tribal residents will be harmed if there is a federal government shutdown.
Tribes faced limited services and health care and programs in 2013 when the government shut down for 16 days. Efforts are underway to bring fresh, healthy foods to Native people in the Southwest to increase access to traditional food and improve public health. In our USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism series, we travel to Phoenix, Arizona, where an urban health service provider is doing just that.
So this is a traditional food.
Melissa Cruz Peoples is the garden coordinator for Native Health and also an educator with Native Seed Search.
So with the gardening projects, it's kind of two different things. It's getting out there, being physically active, and reconnecting with the land and being outside, but it's also about providing healthy food.
The garden is starting from scratch after Native Health was forced to relocate their urban farm after losing land. But Melissa and others who work on the garden project are hopeful it will bring traditional foods to community members and be a way for people to learn more about health and wellness. The garden will include corn, beans, squash, and other traditional crops, which thrive in the arid Southwest.
We partnered with Native Seed Search, which is a seed conservation organization. So we're going to be growing local Tawana Autumn crops and Pima crops. We have several Apache things we're going to grow, some Hopi things, a lot of Navajo Diné crops, too. So we can kind of represent the cultural diversity with the crop diversity that we choose to grow.
Native Health and families in the program, Wellness Warriors, are tending a new plot in a Phoenix neighborhood for the crops. Amanda Torres brings her kids to work in the garden. She says it's hard to raise Native kids in the city and wants to make sure to expose them to Native foods and keep traditions alive.
I grew up around this area and I thought we could never grow anything. So to see them do all this, it gives us hope that we can grow it in our backyard. They're showing us the right ways to do it. Food prices keep going up. Getting harder, and it doesn't seem like prices are going to go back to what they used to be. So I do believe like growing our own foods is kind of what needs to be done now.
Her middle school daughter Olivia says gardening is fun.
Learned how to do like how to plant specific things like corn or carrots, cauliflower, and different kinds of things.
Community health worker Brian Robles says the Wellness Warriors program is about creating opportunities like the community garden.
I think it's huge. I mean, a lot of young kids don't necessarily have that experience or that exposure to community gardens, traditional gardens, and it's something that we're trying to bring back to them so that they can, you know, utilize the information that they learn here to hopefully, you know, either do it at their own homes, with their families, things like that.
Native Health hopes the garden will help address some challenges people face in the city, which include lack of land for gardens and provide education about traditional Native foods. The Wellness Warriors program serves Native American children 7 to 12 years old and their families who are interested in learning about healthy living. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Heard Museum, hosting the 28th Annual Hoop Dance World Championship, where you can see more than 70 talented native hoop dancers vie for the championship title February 10th and 11th. Details at heard.org. Support for Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation comes from the Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More info can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Friday, January 19th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today, in for Andy Klein. And joining me in the studio now is Paulette Simpson and Wayne Jensen. They're on the Treadwell Society. We're going to be talking about their Friday Fireside Lecture, which is indeed tonight. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Tell us about the Treadwell Society. How did it come to be?
Well, the Treadwell Society was incorporated in 2008. The three original incorporators were former Mayor Bruce Botello and Rich Poor and former Assemblyman David Stone. And the idea was to focus on the Treadwell site because of its importance in the development of Alaska. It, at the time, was the largest operating gold mine in the world, and it kind of had been neglected. And so the idea was to preserve a little of what was left, not much, but and then be able to tell the story of the mine, what a prosperous and vibrant community it was back in the day, this mining town, and do what we can with continuing education so Juneau people know about their local history.
All right. I think that followed the AALP or AJT giving the project or giving the property to the city, is that right?
So they gave the property to the city a little earlier, mm-hmm. and then the city turned it into the Treadwell Mine Historic Park. So it's about 15 acres.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Paulette, you're the chair of the board, mm-hmm. is that mm-hmm. right? How long have you been on the board?
Well, since we incorporated in 2008, and Wayne?
Just recently, but I've been a volunteer with the board for several years.
Okay. For our listeners, can you sort of outline the geographic location of this park? I think a lot of us know, but
it's primarily the northern end of the Treadwell mine. The Treadwell mine actually stretches from Sandy Beach about 2 miles down the beach, and it consisted of four mines: the Treadwell mine, the 700 mine, the Mexican mine, and the Ready Bullion mine. They were all operated by the Treadwell Company, but the portion that is owned by the city is essentially the Treadwell mine, which is the one on the north end, and the focus of our presentation will be on that area, okay. Not specifically, but that'll be the focus.
What is that iconic building that we all see when we're walking on Sandy Beach?
That's the saltwater pump house. That was one of our projects that we put a roof on that building to prevent it from deteriorating any further. Because it is an iconic symbol, and it's probably on millions of photographs of tourists coming up the channel and locals. I've got it on, hundreds of my photographs. It's great in the wintertime when the sun's coming up and you get the sunrise, and that's in the background. It's a very iconic photograph. So.
And that building originally was at the end of the Treadwell Wharf, and it was used to pump salt water up to the mine for milling and fryer protection in the winter when the streams were frozen up and they couldn't use water power to operate everything.
Yeah, so it was a very important part of the mine.
Yeah, interesting. And there's another building I think a lot of people recognize if they're walking back in the trees. What? Tell us about that building.
That's a large two-story concrete building which was called the New Office Building. It was built in 1913 or 14, towards the end of the Treadwell area. And it was the office building, the administrative building for the mine, connected to the general store. All the other buildings, for the most part, were made out of wood, and they all were either torn down and salvaged or they burned. And there was a big fire in 1926 that, destroyed most of the other buildings. So it's one of the survivors of the deal. And we're in the process of protecting that, too, and preserving that. So we put on a new roof on it recently, and we're working now on the interior, trying to make that repurposed into a public space, a public shelter.
Okay.
A picnic shelter type thing.
Interesting. Thinking of the four mines that were there, I understand, I've heard about the collapse, but I understand a lot of these were actually under the channel. Can you outline that a little bit for us?
All of the workings of the mine moved underground in 1906, and many of the tunnels ran way under the Gastineau Channel. That's absolutely correct. So when the mine caved in 1917 and three of the four mines were flooded, that signaled the end of the Treadwell mines as we knew it. But yes, many of them. The glory hole, when you take the walk through the park and you go up and you see the glory hole, that's, a lot of people are familiar with the glory hole, and you see the waterfall, well, that's Paris Creek, where gold was first discovered in around 1881. That was all blasted out. That was all open pit mining again until about 1906, when it all moved underground and they followed the ore body and it went under the channel.
That must have been economically devastating, the collapse. I heard that nobody was injured except for some horses or donkeys.
Yeah, possibly one person was unaccounted for. No real record for what happened, but it happened at a shift change, which was so fortunate because there were miners in the mine at the time, and because of the shift change and because of a little bit of warning, they were able to get everybody out, and there were some very tense moments in doing that because the hoists were operated up until the very last minute when the pressure from the caving in, you know, essentially blew out some of the hoists, so they weren't able to operate after that at all. So, and it filled up within 30 minutes or something like that. I mean, it's just like, you know, flushing your toilet, but filling up millions and millions of gallons of water down into the mine. The mine, Paul had mentioned, they went underground. The lowest that they went was about 2,300 feet underground. So, you know, talking, you know, a long ways down to the bottom of this mine.
But the monetary loss at the time was calculated at around $10 million. But what maybe tells the story more than that, in 1916, Alaska produced about $17.5 million in gold, but in 18, after the Treadwell mine collapsed, it was under $10 million. So the Treadwell was a significant loss, significant.
Thinking of that shift change and the timeliness of the collapse, I'm surprised somebody hasn't made a movie, a Hollywood movie about this, right?
Well, there was a play. Sheila Kelly and Perseverance Theater put on a play just last year about the mine and the cave-in, and she wrote this excellent book by Sheila Kelly called Treadwell Gold. And it's an excellent book, and it was a very popular play.
Okay. Tell us about your presentation tonight.
Well, I think we have about, I don't know how many slides, Wayne.
Over 100.
Over 100. We'll try to go fast. But basically, so much research has been done on the Treadwell mine. But Wayne and I have gotten really lucky because with new technologies, we've been able to build on the work of those who came before us, Bob DeArmond especially, and Willette James, David Stone. And we now have had access to the maps, digital access to the maps of the mines. And also, with all of the great search engines out there, we've been able to get additional information about what life was like. And that's really what we're going to try to convey, that it was a good life, it was a rich life, and people recreated, they engaged in sports. And so, with again, being able to look at newspaper articles much more easily now, digital, you know, online, and in newspapers across the country, we hope to just add to what a lot of people already know about the Treadwell mine.
And we're so fortunate because the photographic record of the mine was typically professional photographs. And we have Case and Draper, Winter and Pond, all the professional photographs of the era. And so they're incredibly, you know, high-resolution photographs. And so we can show them on this gigantic screen at the glacier and with a lot of resolution so people can see them really well.
It's interesting, Paulette, that you mentioned it was a good life. I don't think we often think of miners in the early part of the century as having a good life.
Well, they made a very good wage. The wages paid at the Treadwell mine for the time were some of the highest in the world. You made more working at the Treadwell mine than you did at the Ford Motor Company. And the company understood that they had to have happy miners and happy families. And so they provided for things that you can't even imagine in their Treadwell Club with its bowling alleys and motion picture shows being shown all the time, a 15,000-volume library. So you don't think of it that way, but in fact, most of the literature shows that people had a good life there.
But I think you're right. That wasn't necessarily the case of all mining. I mean, you talk about some of the early mines up in the Klondike, and those guys had a tough life, but this one was pretty good. And generally, as Paulette said, they made a good living and had a good life.
Okay. So you're going to be talking more about this tonight from 6:30 to 8, is that right?
6:30, and then we do it again at 8. There will be two presentations. One is starting at 6:30. Presentation will go about 45 minutes to an hour, and then there'll be a break, and then we'll do it again at 8 o'clock.
Okay. And it's out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center,
yes, part of their Fireside program.
So admission is free?
Free, open to the public. We encourage everyone to come.
If somebody wants more information about the Treadwell Society, where can they find that?
Online,
treadwellsociety.com.
All right, Paulette Simpson and Wayne Jensen, meet them tonight at 6:30 or at 8 out at the Mendenhall Visitor Center, Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Thanks for coming on the show, you two. Is there anything we're missing or anything else you'd like to add?
No. Come out and look at the great photographs.
Great. Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
In the black dust towns of East Tennessee, all the work's about the same. You may not go to a job in the ground, but you'll learn a miner's refrain. I'm down in a hole, I'm down in a hole.
Are you interested in signing up for the Southeast Garden Conference in Haines, February 16th through the 18th? Spaces are limited, and due to the overwhelming interest in regional gardening, the event is filling up fast. Be sure to register in the next couple of days before it fills up completely. For more information about this new regional gardening event and to register, go to eventbrite.com and search for Southeast Garden Conference. That's eventbrite.com for the Southeast Garden Conference in Haines, February 16th through the 18th.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, January 19th. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Andrea Budbill. She is the community outreach educator for Planned Parenthood. And we're going to be talking about Planned Parenthood and also a new program called LIFT. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Mm-hmm. Nice to be here.
All right. Planned Parenthood, tell us about the services you offer here in Juno.
Yeah, so Juno is really lucky because we do have all three of the kind of branches of what Planned Parenthood does, and that's the, you know, the clinic services, so the, all the medical care. We also have advocacy and votes, so that's where people, you know, are fighting for our rights. And then we have education, and so I fall under the education piece, and we get to provide information to at community events and also in the schools. We also have the teen council program that falls under that, which we have 9 members this year, and it's very exciting. So, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What would you say Planned Parenthood does the most of in our community?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I know that the clinic is opened 3 days a week, and it is pretty busy. So there's definitely a lot of medical services being provided. With advocacy, especially right now, it's legislative session, so there's a lot going on there as well. And then in education, I know that I'm very busy, so I do a lot all over the community as well. So we do a lot that out here in Juneau that maybe people don't know about how much we actually do.
Right, and you're there by Twin Lakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the 3 days that you are open?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So LIFT, what mm-hmm. is this, Linking Families and Teens?
Yeah. So LIFT is a new family program, and I'm really excited about it. It was created specifically for rural communities, and so Juno is considered rural. It's created to help teens and a caring adult in their life kind of strengthen their relationship and learn some really good communication skills. So the adults get to learn about how to communicate their values with the teens in a way that, you know, allows the teen to understand where the adult is coming from. And then the teens also get to learn some really good skills on how to approach the adult with some tough topics. So it's a really cool new curriculum. It started with our affiliate, which is Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and Hawaiian Islands. So it started down in Washington, and it's kind of spreading now across the country. This is its second or third year in existence, and we get to participate this year.
Excellent. So maybe parents of teens who are listening right now, mm-hmm. who can participate in this, and how do they do that?
Yeah. So it's open to anyone. So the teens, that's 14 through 19, we can actually also accept 13-year-olds who are currently in 8th grade and going into 9th grade. So really 13 through 19. And then a teen can go with their parent or grandparent or a coach. It's a caring adult.
Caring adult.
Yeah, so, you know, some teens might feel a really close connection with a teacher of theirs or some sort of mentor. And so it's open to any of those types of relationships. Any teen can participate as well.
And how many? Is there a restriction on numbers? Or
no, there's not. And we're offering one program, one implementation coming February 3rd, and then another in April. So if this one, you know, isn't the best timing, we have another one coming up too. There's no restriction on how many people can participate. It's more right now actually trying to meet the minimum. So.
Okay, so again, we have maybe a listener who's a teen or a caring adult in a teen's life who wants to do this. They contact you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can be contacted. Probably the easiest way to tell you through the radio is my cell phone number, and that's 907 290-1347.
And we'll repeat that in a little bit if you're getting a pen out.
There's also, I have some flyers up around town. There's I have a Facebook, Sex Ed Andrea, and so anybody can go and add me as a friend. That's like my professional Facebook for Planned Parenthood. And so I post a lot of information about Lyft there as well. If you Google, you know, Planned Parenthood, Lyft, you could probably find something pretty easily, too.
Okay. So, again, if a caring adult or teen wants to join this program, what's that going to look like? How much time are they going to spend with you in this program, and what are they going to do?
Yeah, good question. So this is actually part of a randomized control trial, which means that everybody who signs up for the program is actually participating in research. So this program is developed in our affiliate, so in Planned Parenthood, and the goal is to get it on the evidence-based programs list. So we're in sort of these trial phases, and so people who sign up, they have to fill out some paperwork, you know, consent and assent forms, and then they do baseline surveys. Once I have everybody finished with that enrollment paperwork, then I get to send that to a research firm in New York. They split the group in half, and I will, you know, if the teen and the adult who join together, they stay together, so they won't be separated. But say I have 10 families, 5 will be put into a group that is survey only, and 5 will be put into a group that gets the Lyft program. So if you're put into the survey only group, you have already completed the baseline survey. You have a survey, the adult and the teen have a survey 3 months later, and then the teen has another survey a year later. And people get paid for every survey that they take. So adults earn up to $80 and teens earn up to $110.
In total or per survey?
In total.
Okay.
And then if you are put into the Lyft group, so meaning you get the content, then you come to a one-day event, which is about 6 hours on a Saturday, and that's going to be February 3rd for our first one, and then April for our second one. And so it's just a one-day commitment where you get the content, and then you also do the same surveys. So these, and you also get paid for the same surveys. We have a couple other incentives. So people who enroll now, they get all their paperwork into me. We're giving out some gift cards, things like that. People who are enrolled and then refer another family and that family enrolls, then they get a coffee card. We're trying to get people to participate with us, and so we can get this research out there. And then once the program is finished and the research is done, then we'll be able to offer the program to anybody. So I'm really excited for that opportunity because I think it could really benefit the community of Juneau.
So, and it's all about sort of healthy communication between teens and care providers or caring adults, as you say.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And in this, so there's going to be the first workshop, you said, on February 3rd, on that Saturday. Can you share a few examples of the things that you're able to share with these individuals?
Yeah, so there's... the adults get to learn how to become an askable or approachable adult. So, you know, kind of a way to show their teen that they are open and willing to listen to what the teen has to say. And, you know, so sometimes, especially if there's a disagreement between a teen and an adult, like maybe they have values that don't match up exactly. We're trying to figure out ways for you to still communicate through those. So being askable then allows that teen to go to you for support and whatever they need. And we know that that's really important for teens and for people in general, but especially for teens. So that's another one of the goals, is actually really to make teens feel more connected. And there are other pieces as well. Like studies show that the relationship between teens and a caring adult in their life drastically reduces number of unwanted pregnancies, delayed sexual activity, things like that, that a lot of people really care about and really want for their teens. So this is another way to sort of help make that happen.
I don't know about you, but when I was a teen, I was not a good communicator.
No, no, definitely not. Most of us aren't.
Okay. Again, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So either by going on Facebook and looking up Sex Ed Andrea, and that's Andrea, A-N-D-R-I-A, or my phone number, which is 907-290-1347.
Okay, and again, this is 13-year-olds who are going into ninth grade
mm-hmm.
next year, or 14 through 19?
Mm-hmm. Through 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. This seems like a very interesting program.
I'm really excited.
All mm-hmm. right. Andrea Budbill, she is the community outreach court educator for Planned Parenthood. You can find her on Facebook. It's Sex Ed Andrea, or call her at 907-290-1347.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Andrea, thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'll be at LunaFest tonight if anybody has more questions. I'll be there supporting them, too.
Oh, great. What time does that start again?
Doors open at 6 for the silent auction, and the program starts at 6:30.
All right. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
I'm pretty without any makeup on. You think I'm funny when I tell the punchline wrong. I know you get me, so I let my walls come down, down. Before you met me, I was alright, but things were kinda heavy. You brought me to life, now every February you'll be my Valentine, Valentine. Let's go all the way tonight. No regrets, just love. We can dance until we die. You and I will be young forever. You make me feel like I'm living a teenage dream. The way you turn me on, I can't sleep. Let's run away and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back. My heart stops when you look at me. Just one touch. No, baby, I believe this is real. So take a chance and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back. We drove to Cali and got drunk on the beach. Got a motel and built a fort out of sheets. Finally found you, my missing puzzle piece. I'm complete. Let's go all the way tonight. No regrets, just love. We can dance until we die. You and I will be young forever. Cause you make me feel like I'm living a teenage dream. The way you turn me on, I can't sleep. Let's run away and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back. My heart stops when you look at me. Just one touch. No, baby, I believe this is real. So take a chance and don't ever look back. Don't ever look. I'ma get your heart racing in my skin tired jeans. Be your teenage dream tonight. Let you put your hands on me in my skin tired jeans. Be your teenage dream tonight. You make me feel like a teenage dream. The way you turn me on, I can't sleep. Let's run away and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back. My heart stops when you look at me. Just one touch. Now baby, I believe this is real. So don't ever look back. No, I'ma get your heart racing in my skin tired jeans. Be your teenage dream tonight. I'll let you put your hands on me in my skin tight jeans. Be your teenage dream tonight.
Join the Juneau Economic Development Council in Juneau, February 21st through the 22nd for the Alaska Innovation Summit, the largest innovation conference in Alaska with over 300 professionals across many industries, and featuring Franz Johansson from the Medici Group. He's consulted with 30% of Fortune 100 companies, and he'll speak about how seizing opportunities and using diversity of skill set, experience, and profession drives innovation. Tickets include workshops, meals, activities, and more. Registration and details at jedc.org/innovation.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Friday, January 19th, 2018, about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. And in the studio, we have Amanda Blackgoat. She is the board president of the Alaska Youth Choir, and also Cooper and Piper. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
It's nice to have you all here. Amanda, the Alaska Youth Choir, where do you all perform?
We perform, we have our own concerts, usually in the spring and in the fall. This year we performed with Juno Douglas High School Choir for the Christmas concert.
Okay.
That was a lot of fun. And we also perform we just actually recently performed our advanced choir perform for the opening of the legislature. And then we also perform at the Alaska Folk Festival and Community Day at UAS, and sometimes we get invites other places, but those are bigger.
All right. About how many of you are there, and what's the age range?
The age range is from 6 to 18, and there are about 20 of us, choristers anyway, and we're hoping to make it bigger.
All right. Cooper, are you on the choir?
Yes.
And may I ask how old you are?
7.
All right. And what is your favorite part about the choir?
That we get to sing in, like, a whole group.
Oh, yeah?
Family.
Okay. How about you, Piper? May I ask how old you are?
I'm 9. And what I love about Alaska Youth Choir is that we go with the flow, and it's a big singing family.
Going with the flow, I like it. Okay. Okay, what are some examples of songs that you all like to sing?
Well, we keep singing I forgot what it was called, but it's in Latin, and it's pretty fun to say or sing. And
what was your favorite song from last concert?
It was Do Re Mi, because the musical is great, and I love the song.
Okay. And how about you, Cooper? Do you have a favorite song?
Not really. I like all of them.
Do you? And did I see on Facebook that you all performed the Alaska flag song for the legislature?
Yeah.
How was that, being in the Capitol?
Good. It was pretty fun. I was a bit bummed because we didn't get to go this year.
The advanced choir got to go, but not the younger choirs.
Got it. Okay, so there are two choirs.
There's three choirs,
three?
Actually. Yeah, there's preparatory, which Cooper's in.
And the advanced.
Intermediate, which Piper's in, and then advanced.
Okay. If somebody wants to get involved with the choir, how do they do that?
Well, they can reach us through Alaska Youth Choir @gmail.com or at alaskayouthchoir.com for our web page, our website. They can also contact our business administrator, Amy Ely, at 907-789-1941.
And I hear you have some placement rehearsals coming up.
Yes. So they can also just show up for a placement rehearsal, which is in next couple of rehearsals, and they can just show up. And like I said, the younger choir starts from 6 to 8 at 5:45 at Faith Lutheran out in the valley. It's on Sunset Drive. And then kids age 9 to 11 is more the age for our intermediate group, and they start at 6:30 and they go to 7:30. And then anybody a little 12 and older usually would be in our advanced group, and that would start at 7 o'clock and end at 8:30.
Do kids have to have experience singing before they start with you?
Oh, no, absolutely not. This is how they get experience. No. We welcome all levels, all experience, anything.
Cooper, do you remember when you first started?
About 2 years ago.
And was it fun? Was it hard? What was it like?
It was fun that I got to sing with friends, and I learned how to sing.
Okay. Yeah. How about you, Piper?
It was great because I know not a lot of people, but we go with the flow. And that's when I started making friends. And some of my friends have not gone because I don't know why, though. It's pretty fun. Don't know why they wanted to quit, or maybe they had too much. But I really had fun.
And, Amanda, what have you seen from these two as they've participated?
Oh, well, I have seen one who is loud improve a lot, and one that is quiet become louder. So I've had three girls go through Alaska Youth Choir. My oldest, Morgan, is now 16, and she no longer does Alaska Youth Choir because, as Piper said, she has a lot to do in high school. But all three of them sing in the house. So sometimes you come home and all three of them are singing a song. Currently, Alaska Youth Choir has also been welcome to participate in Into the Woods. Quite a few of them have chosen to do that. And so Into the Woods is one of the favorites in the house, so you hear that a lot. My oldest was also in Beauty and the Beast, and so that was Beauty and the Beast solid for a good 2 months. But they all love singing, and their levels are all different, but I think that just how they present themselves and interact and analyze how they talk with other people, too. They also got to go to a short tour in Southeast to Skagway and Haines this past summer.
That was awesome.
Yeah, so it was lots of fun, and I think that just helps open doors, especially within Alaska, to what other communities are like and what we have to offer.
Okay. Remind us again, if somebody wants to get involved, what are the best phone numbers or contacts?
Phone number again is 907-789-1941, or they can contact us through email at alaskayouthchoir@gmail.com. They can also visit we also have a Facebook at Alaska Youth Choir, and then we also have a website, alaskayouthchoir.com.
Okay. As we close, any last comments, Piper? If there's a kid your age out there listening, what would you tell them? Why should they come be part of Alaska Youth Choir?
Because it's a great experience, and there's no reason why they shouldn't love it.
Okay. How about you, Cooper? Any advice for our listeners why they should come be part of Alaska Youth Choir?
Because it, like, makes them want to do singing and learn more.
All right. Who could argue with that? We've been speaking with Cooper, Piper, and Amanda Blackgoat, and you can learn more about the Alaska Youth Choir at their Gmail account or Facebook, or was it 907-789-1941?
Correct.
All right, Amanda, thanks for coming on the show. Thank you, Cooper. Thank you, Piper. Anything else anyone wants to add?
No, thank you very much for having us.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Come hear how great composers from the concert stage and screen have reinterpreted Shakespeare's literary classics. Join me, Troy Quinn, and the Juno Symphony as we perform ravishingly beautiful music on January 27th and January 28th at JDHS. Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture promises to have you on your feet as the orchestra indulges in Nino Rota's iconic love theme, A Time for Us, as well as music from the movie Shakespeare in Love and Youth Solo Concerto Competition winner Kyle Farley Robinson. Tickets are at Hearthside, the Jack, JunoSymphony.org, and at the door.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, January 19th. It's about 12 minutes until the top of the hour, and we have a couple storytellers in the studio now, Tom Cosgrove and Pete Griffin. We're going to be talking about Sunday's Story Factory and probably all things mudrooms. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks.
Hey, thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Yeah.
Some mudrooms. I think a lot of us know what mudrooms is.
Mudrooms is a monthly storytelling event. Seven people, seven stories, 7 minutes apiece, real people telling real stories.
You guys are, you're on the board, and you're like a
sidekick. I'm a helper.
Okay.
I advocate for story, and this is an opportunity. Tom asked me to help out, and I'd love to.
Well, you two are both professional storytellers, right?
Yeah. I mean, I tell people
make
that
hundreds of dollars
a year.
But you have gotten up and told, how many stories have you told in mudrooms proper, would you say?
I've done one each of the seasons, and we're in our seventh season.
How about you, Pete?
I've done three overall.
How would you speak to its success? Why do you like it? Why do you keep coming back?
I love it because it's personal stories. I watch storytellers tell fables and legends, and those are all entertaining, but personal stories for me are about real people and about people's vulnerabilities, and they're essentially exposing themselves and their vulnerabilities, and there are things that I can identify with. I feel more a part of humanity when I hear people tell those stories about significant things in their lives.
I think we should put it on the website. I feel more a part of humanity when I hear people tell those stories.
That was good. Write that down.
How about you, Tom?
Why do I keep coming back? I think what Pete hit on, I mean, there's a magical something that happens, and you talk to almost anyone who's stood on that stage, and it's, you have a very forgiving audience, and you are emotionally connecting with these people. And it is both frightening and enthralling and exhilarating. And, people are learning. We're sharing things within our community that we never otherwise would have shared.
When is the next actual mudrooms?
The next actual mudrooms is February 13th. That's Tuesday. But we're here to talk about Sunday's event.
Okay. Story Workshop? Story Factory Workshop.
Story Factory.
And this is the second one, is that right?
Yes, correct. The second Story Factory. First one went great. Lots of folks. We broke up into groups. And some of the stories that came out of that, I was at the last mudrooms, and folks had taken our coaching to heart and really came up with some dandies.
Wow. So it's exactly what it sounds like, right? You bring your personal story to you guys and their peers, and you workshop and figure out how to make it more.
There was different people showed up with different. Some people said, hey, this sounds interesting. They had nothing. And they just wanted to observe and listen and hear what was going on. There were some people there with a germ of idea, like, where do I even go with this? And there were some folks that showed up. They said, I think we got this story, but I don't really know. And they actually wanted to run through something. So, you know, it's like all levels. And having three of us, because Pat McClear is the third that did this the first time, we can do that. So that's what we did.
Wow. And is there a cost for this?
Oh, big bucks. No, totally free. No reservations. This is Sunday at 3 p.m. at Northern Light United Church. And that's downtown at 9th and B, again, 3 p.m. And no, it is no cost. This is twofold. First of all, this is obviously a way for us to bring more people to the stage, which is one of our missions. One of the informal rules that we have is that we want five new people that have never been on the mudroom stage each time. Now, we've been at this 7 years, and there's a lot of people, veterans, that want to do it again, and so fitting everyone in. But it's like, how do you keep on getting that circle out further and further? And one of the things we heard repeatedly is that, you know, only if I had some help. And so here we are.
Okay. Let's say, you guys, I came to you on Sunday, and I wanted to tell a story about this. I did this show for public media, you know, and I would interview people, and this one time these two storytellers came, and how would you, what would you do with me to try and get the story out? What are some of your techniques?
Oh, gosh, I think one of the things I would ask is, what did you learn from all this? Did you learn anything during this process that you now apply to real life?
How did it make you feel?
There you go.
Yeah. How did it make you feel? Did it hurt? Was it positive? Did it, you know, bring a smile to your face on a day that otherwise was empty of smiles?
Wow. And then you would just keep working to sculpt it into
Figure out the order you want to tell the story in. Sometimes folks start at the beginning, go through the middle, and then end it. Sometimes it's good to start in the middle of the story. There I was standing on a cliff. It was 200 feet down, and the rocks were crumbling beneath my feet. And then the story goes on how you got there. And then the end of the story is how this all resolved.
Interesting. You know, my background is in print, and I think a lot of writers would agree that revise. Would you say that that's true in oral storytelling as well?
Absolutely. Every time I tell a story, it's a little bit different, and sometimes folks, other storytellers may come to me, or somebody else might come to me and said, you know, this thing confused me when you did that, and I'll think, well, that's right. I can see where somebody would be confused, so I'll change it. So the next time I tell it, it's just a little bit different.
You know, and some people, you know, I was a writer first, and Pete and I were talking about this just outside before we came in, the difference between the written and the spoken word. And so if you're a writer, you write this paragraph, and you know what? It's a damn good paragraph, right? It's this beautiful thing. But when you say it out loud, it sounds stilted. Mm-hmm. And so making that transition to say, what would I say if I was just talking to a friend? And that's the language that you use. And so to get the same sentiment across, but to use vernacular in order to seem less stilted.
Okay. Give us the details again, please, for Sunday.
It is Story Factory, Sunday, 3 p.m., Northern Light United Church. That's the corner. It's downtown at 9th and B Street, and we would love to have you. And if you don't want to even go on to Mudrooms, not a requirement. If you just want to come and work on stories, please join us.
And I think you were telling me before the show that the next Mudrooms is full, but April has openings?
Yeah, we need folks for March, Wet and Wild, and April, White Lies.
If you have any story, just an idea around something wet and wild or around White Lies, you could come this Sunday, and just build it.
Yeah, let's start getting that going.
If you've got a story, we can help you turn it into a wet and wild or white lie.
All right. That's Pete Griffin and Tom Cosgrove. You can meet them this Sunday at what time?
3 p.m. at Northern Light United Church.
Great, guys. Thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
Always nice to be on the show, Scott.
Thanks. Nice having you here.
Thank you.
story of a song.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno afternoon. Looking at the weather for tonight, calls for mostly cloudy skies, lows in the mid-20s and light winds. Tomorrow, Saturday, calls for mostly cloudy skies with highs in the mid-30s and light winds. Scattered snow showers are possible in the Mendenhall Valley. And going into Sunday, looks like mostly cloudy skies with highs around 30. Northeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon. We'll see you on Monday.